This is an ABC podcast.
I loved skipping. I loved it, and especially I like to go pepper. When you say pepper, and then you go twice as fast as you can.
Hello, Kirsty Melville here with you, and welcome to the History Listen, where today I'd like you to join me as we pay a visit to one of the least remembered migrant camps in Australia, known as the Benalla Experiment.
There have been so many tears in this space that we're sitting in here at the moment, I wouldn't want to count them, mine included.
This was a time when immigration was seen as vital to Australia's security. We could populate or we could perish. And the post-war immigrants who arrived were told to forget their past and to remember that Australia was their future. But among these forgotten pasts is the camp at Benalla, about an hour north of Melbourne. And like many of its nearly 60,000 former inhabitants, this camp has a difficult history. To find out why, Lynn Gallagher takes up her microphone and her skipping rope.
You've come to the southern hemisphere now, and the seasons are reversed. It'll be your first Christmas in the southern hemisphere. We hope that you will enjoy many more of them.
I'll have a try.
My name is Sophia. Everybody calls me Sophie Arendt, but I was a Golonski. And I am, at the moment, I am at Benalla Migrant Camp in Hut 11.
And I'm Zabina Smythe. I'm the Benalla Migrant Camp Exhibition Coordinator. So I've been working on this project since 2013. Collecting the photos and stories of the former Benalla migrant camp.
We're at the Benalla migrant camp photographic exhibition, which is on display in one of the old army huts that was built here on this aerodrome as temporary accommodation for trainee pilots during World War II.
Clear prop.
After the war, when the pilots moved out, these huts became a semi-permanent home for migrant families fleeing Europe. Some of the families were here for decades, and unlike other migrant camps, this camp specialised in supporting single mothers and their children. And now Sabina and Sophia want to show me photographs from that time. The first one is Sophia's migrant identification card. It has a picture of Sophia as a child with a big bow at the top of her head.
Yes, I have got a bow on the top of my head, and I believe that the jumper that I've got on, my godmother had knitted for me, especially to come to Australia with.
Sophia was part of Arthur Caldwell's grand plan for Australia's future. Post-World War II, he was Australia's immigration minister, overseeing the arrival of thousands
Ladies
of European migrants.
The mission on which I am now embarking is vital to the nation. I am going abroad to seek ships or immigrants. If we have no ships, we shall get no immigrants. And without immigration, the future of the Australia we know will be both uneasy and brief. Try and forget the troubles you've been through, the past which is behind you, and if you wish to maintain in your hearts, while you are in Australia, a souvenir of the land that bore you and a remembrance of your dear ones, remember that your future is before you and that that future will be as you yourselves make it in Australia.
I
I'm now at the main gates of the Benalla Migrant Centre, and you would not know that 60,000 European migrants once entered these gates in its 18 years of operation. Now what you see is a retirement village, a TAFE, and a war memorial. Royal Australian Air Force Benalla, 1941 to 1945. This was the number 11 elementary flight training school. So that's what the monument is to. However, for 18 years, it was also a migrant camp, and there's no monument to that yet.
Get it, Billy. Oh, good try.
Hi, my name's Helen Topor. I used to live in the Benalla Migrant Camp from 1957 till 1964. I got to Benalla age 10 and I left at age 16.
In order to remember Benalla better, Helen's compiled a book of outdoor games, about 100 of them, all games that she used to play here at the migrant camp.
Some of the games that had Polish specific names were Partia, Palanta, Jajka, and Klimpi. Klimpi was my favourite game because it required a little bit of maths. Basically, we would just take a plank from a fruit case. We'd fashion a bit of a handle out of it. So you've got a nice, a long, narrow plank. Then you'd get a bit of a broomstick, an old broomstick. You'd whittle the two ends, so you've got two pointy ends. Put the Klimpi down on the ground, take your bat, tip the pointy bit. That would lift the Klimpi in the air. And then what you do is just tap the Klimpi in the air. One, two, three, four, and you'd be walking. And then when you thought you might get a bit wobbly, you just give it a great big whack, and then you'd count the number of steps. That's your score. And then next player plays. Loved it.
I think Benalla in many ways was a heaven sent for mothers who didn't have a breadwinner, because in other areas of Australia, single mothers were often forced to give their children up into orphanages while they worked off their 2 years of labour obligation to the Australian government. And Benalla was a bit different, because right next to this Benalla camp were two factories where, so the women could basically come here with their children, leave them in the camp where there was 24-hour childcare, which was new in those days, and go to the factories to work and come back at lunchtime.
At the time, forgetting was much encouraged. The Second World War left entire countries traumatised, and forgetting was a practical way forward for widowed, divorced, or even raped mothers. But now, their children want to remember. And that's why Sabina Smythe, along with 87 different migrant camp families, fashioned this photographic exhibition. The Golonskis, including Sophia, were among them. And who's in this photo, the three?
That's me, my brother Tad, the one with polio, and my brother Zenon. And I would say my brother Kaz is a baby. He's probably inside.
And you remember the freezing cold and the...
And the hot. Very cold in the wintertime, yes, and very hot in the summertime. And, I mean, a lot of the parents illegally, because we didn't have any... No plugs or any of any sort, only the lights. So a lot of the men, we, you know, bought little radiators and illegally wired them into the light globe so that we could have a bit of heat. Yes, so we had a few little fires, but nothing major. And that's outside the hut that we lived in, yes. But that's a christening. And I'm looking up at my mum. And this is Mrs. Peruga, this is Mrs. Rilevsky. She's going to be 100, I think, this year. Yes, and that's Mrs. Bem. She's still alive. She's getting on too. She'll probably be getting close to 100, yes. So that was a christening.
It took two different hearings for this site to be listed by the Heritage Council of Victoria in 2016. At first, the council wasn't interested, partly because not that much of the migrant camp is actually left. but the place is powerful. So the site was finally granted a heritage listing, unusually on social and cultural grounds, not architectural. Bruce Panay from Charles Sturt University in Albury-Wodonga was there to lead the charge.
Heritage Victoria did want to know about the site. They said Bonegilla did that job of remembering migration in Australia, and they didn't need to have the Benalla story. And yet the Benalla story amplifies the Bonegilla story. It tells that other dimension.
Unlike Bonegilla, Benalla was a holding centre, not a reception centre. It was a place where people stayed for years and worked and lived, rather than simply waiting to be processed.
And that's why I was really disappointed that when it closed, a lot of people completely forgot about it. Like, you'd say to somebody and they say, oh, we've lived in Benalla all our life and we didn't know there was a migrant camp here. And you think, gosh, how did you not know there was a migrant camp here? You know, I found that really difficult.
I agree with Sophie on that one. It is, for example, I came to Australia in 1984 and my husband took me on a bit of a drive around the town, what is worth seeing, and he pretty much brought me here first because he knew I was a migrant, and as a migrant I would be interested in this story, and that is Australia is a country of migrants. So I don't understand that this site slipped off the radar for so many years. We really celebrated when the site was declared as of state heritage significance, because not only because that gave the site the significance it deserved, but also because the whole process brought everyone together and made everyone say out loud, this site does actually really matter. And people from Australia go overseas to find their roots, and I think this is a place like that. This is a place that's given a lot of people like almost an anchor in Australia. Because it was like a home. People stayed here for years and years. The huts appeared as if they had little gardens and they were made really homely. And the sense of community, like what Sophie was just saying before about if there was an event, the whole Polish community would come. You know, I've heard so many people saying that they left all their families behind in Europe, but they found new uncles and aunts for their children here because everyone stuck together like that. And one of the migrant camp kids said to me the other day, if your shoelaces were undone, they'd be 10 mums to do them up for you, because everyone looked out for each other.
Sabina believes it was the energy in the room that made the Heritage Council change its mind. 100 people clapping and crying as their stories were told. The council had never seen anything like it. But the town of Benalla itself? Well, it sees things differently, because there are only a few of these old huts left and they're now being used by other community groups. One is for a group of potters, another is for painters, one's a yoga studio, one's for hot air balloonists, and several are occupied by the gliding club. Then there's this one that was part of the old migrant camp school. It's now a prop store for the local theatre company.
So I'm in front of the Benalla Aerodrome School. It was called State School 4651. The Department of Immigration provided 4 huts to the Department of Education. One was to be used as a dwelling for the head teacher. The others were partitioned for classrooms. But they're the only example of a migrant camp school anywhere in Australia.
Hi, I'm Chris Dunster, and my mum was June Cracknell, and she was a teacher at the migrant camp. She was a deserted wife. She had 3 children, and the camp teaching afforded her accommodation as well as employment and built-in babysitters. But I have no memory of it, which is a shame.
Chris was just a baby when she lived at the migrant camp. Her mother refused to give her up when her father disappeared. So like other camp women, Chris's mother was a working single mum. And Chris wishes that the old school at the camp could be remembered for what it was.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, some towns ignore their history. And I don't know if that's because the migrant camp was for women without partners, partners who died in the war or whatever happened to them, and maybe that's part of the issue. I don't know.
Was there a sense of shame, do you think?
Well, you do wonder that, but I didn't actually find out that it was a camp where mainly only single women came with their children until I was helping at the camp.
And yet that was one of the reasons why your mum was there.
I know. Odd, isn't it? But I think the community is beginning to acknowledge that we have to preserve this history.
But the problem here is that the few remaining migrant camp huts are not owned by the council. The council owns the land, but not the huts. So it's difficult for them to be preserved as a migrant camp and at the same time allow for the other community groups to occupy them. This schoolroom, which is now a prop store, is a perfect example. Come and take a peek.
So I'm looking inside the window here. The windows are broken and open, and one presumes that the starlings can get in. Feels like trespassing on the past. An ancient ruin of a toilet block is here. It's the original toilets that would have been attached to the aerodrome school where the migrant kids would have gone to the loo. I'm ignoring the sign that says keep out. That is a heritage toilet flush. And here we have a heritage listed hand washing basin. It's nice and evocative because it's the same as in the pictures that you see at the migrant camp.
Yeah, well, the bathrooms were of great interest because where the nails used to be and the nails were pulled out, there would be a hole. So that became the peephole. And the boys used to love peeping at the girls having their showers. There were communal wash blocks. So the men and boys on one side of the wall, women and girls on the other side. So kids with a sharp eye will see a peephole and then you could hear them sniggering, then you knew that they were peeping at you. So you'd have to put your finger on the peephole while you tried to have your shower and then you'd find a little bit of toilet paper and put it in there so they couldn't peep at you anymore. So there was no room for squeamishness or privacy.
And some of the boys pretended to be pregnant?
Yeah, you know, and it was a real trick to kind of distend your upper stomach to, you know, make it look like you were pregnant. They thought it was hilarious, you know, that they were going to have a baby. And, of course, the girls would laugh their heads off.
But laughing was harder for the adults. Traumatised and poor, mothers found camp life difficult. They couldn't earn enough to pay their board and save up enough money to leave the camp. But as Bruce Prenet says, as non-English, non-work-ready displaced persons, that for them was part of the deal.
It's easy to disperse those people who were work-ready. Canada, the United States, Australia, were all lining up to take the young people who were work-ready. Nobody particularly wanted those who weren't work-ready. And that's the people who had dependent children or dependent parents. And yet, we still needed migrants, so Harold Holt agreed to Australia taking in some of these people as a humanitarian gesture to open up to let these people in. I think government's reckoning was that if you give it time, that the children of these people would become work ready and pay for the way for themselves and their parents. And perhaps they were willing to forego a generation to get to those children. Now, the problem with that was that it wasn't very good for the generation that they were foregoing, was it?
Pinky, pinky, pokey, father bought a donkey. Donkey died, father cried, inky, pinky, pokey.
Inky, pinky, bonky, father bought a donkey. Donkey died, father cried, inky, pinky, bonky.
These games, documented in Helen's book, show how the camp kids spent all of their playtime outdoors, meaning that they could hop, skip, jump, run, climb better than the Australian kids. And they did so with their own Cold War twist.
One thing we did know was communism was terrible and it was associated with the Russians. And we knew that America was king and that John Kennedy was the best man that walked the earth. And we all knew about General Eisenhower. Somehow he won the war against communism. So when we played Partia and divided the world into two halves, everyone wants to be on the American team. And that's what I mean by the Cold War background. Sometimes, just to be ornery, we say, okay, well, I'm on the Russian team. And some kids will say, okay, I'm on the Russian team too. And then, of course, the competition would really rev up something. You had to defeat Russia. And then the Russians had to defeat America. So we're always aware of the world being divided into the communist sphere, which was Russia for short, and the Western sphere, America for short. So that's what I mean by the Cold War. And that's why spying became such a big thing too.
Spying involved secrets, dressing up and speaking in pig Latin.
I weigh Ursche, Anke, Pigse. I sure can still speak pig Latin.
So much fun was had that this generation were delighted by Sabina Smythe's photo exhibition. It gave them the chance to see themselves as children again.
Yes. I presume this was taken at the camp. And this is my brother. And my other brother, I think, is here. So they'd have been six and seven.
But where's your mum in the photo?
Well, that's what I was trying to look at. And I can't see her in the shot at all. She's not there. Although it says Miss Cracknell with her class. She must be in the shadow in the background.
And that's just it. The experience of the mothers in this migrant camp was vastly different from the experience of the children. And the memories that are attached to these photographs emphasise all that, as Sophia learnt the hard way.
See, my mum came. We brought my mother here. And she was only in here for a few minutes and she needed to go home. We got her in the car and she was sick and she was crying and everything and wanted to go home.
And what about your daughter?
My daughter, she's very, emotional, sentimental, I suppose. Yeah, she can see the history and everything and that happened here and that. Yeah, she sort of, But she could accept it a lot better, but my mother really just didn't. I don't know, it was really hard. I thought I'd never expected it. She really didn't want to come, and she probably knew deep down that it'd probably bring back a lot of memories. But we made her come, and then she was only here for a few minutes and started looking at the photos of all the people that she remembered, you know, and that was it. We had to take her home.
Part of the Benalla Migrant Camp photographic exhibition was a video featuring Oleg Mitrochowicz. His mother first worked at the town hospital across the road as a translator, then at the clothing factory also across the road, and then finally at the camp creche.
My name's Oleg Mitrochowicz. We came to the Benalla Migrant Camp from Bonagila. Mum being a really good seamstress from her younger days, she fitted in really well and she picked the business up really quickly. And so she stayed there until 1957, I think. And then we had some more migrants came in, new migrants came in from Europe, mostly Yugoslavs. The same thing happened. They asked Mum if she'd come in and help them in the creche kindergarten combination because she spoke good Yugoslav and so she came back to do that. And then after a while, we don't really talk about it a lot because I don't know how it was hidden away, but I had another brother, a younger brother, and who was born here, and he died of cot death before he was 12 months old. And I remember that, and he's in Benalla, they're not too far away from Mum now. But it was after that time when he'd passed away, I couldn't work out why Mum had changed so much. At my age, I just didn't know what was going on, really. But from there on, she was a different person. She was still friendly and everything else, but you could see spark just disappeared.
And I think that's what happened to a lot of people. Like Oleg in the video cried remembering this story that happened to his mother, because he remembered how, you know, traumatized she was, and losing a child triggered all the things that she had already gone through, nearly losing Oleg, because Oleg's story itself is just amazingly traumatic, because as a very young child in arms, his mother was with him in a train headed for a concentration camp, and there were some young men in the train carriage that his mother and he were in that realised where they were heading and set about unrailing the carriage. So they ran from one side of the carriage to the other to destabilise it. And they made a particular effort when the train was going around a bend, and they managed to derail the wagon. It broke open. They were able to run into the forest and escape. And that is Oleg's story. And I think it was for all of us a realization that, you know, even just stepping over that little, you know, threshold there into a hut, this is for many people was the first time after all the time in the camp that they were able to go back into a hut space. And then all those memories got triggered. There have been so many tears in this space that we're sitting in here at the moment. I wouldn't want to count them, mine included.
Like when you're a child, you don't accept a lot of things. You just take it all for granted. I mean, the migrant camp for us was great. School was great. All the functions we did were great. It's not until you grow up and you get married and you have your own children that you turn around and you think about what your parents went through. You know, that decision to come to a strange country and to accept everything that happens here and what they had to go through in the camp and what they were given, what they weren't given. It really makes you appreciate it. And that's why I think it means so much, why it should still be here.
The Benalla Experiment was produced by Lynn Gallagher. And a warm thank you to all of those who shared their stories. I'm Kirsty Melville. You've been listening to The History Listen on RN. And just as those skipping teddy bears tell me, I'm turning off the light and saying good night. Catch you next time.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.